then I discussed it with the Rebbe of mine, who I'm very fond of. My grandson Tzvidal Kantovsky is a Chassad Livracha. One of my children is named after him. That's how much I love this Rebbe. He was a Rebbe of mine, Rosh Hashiva, a Talmud Buva Gemach Soloveitchik, and a Rav in Yom Yisrael of Eastern Parkway, and later on the Rav in Yom Yisrael of West Hempstead, the founding Rav, and then he was a Rosh Kodol, him and Yom Yisrael, he made Aliyah. He used to walk around Soloveitchik along the banks of the river in Manhattan at 3 o'clock in the morning. The Rav would wake him up to talk with him in Divrei Torah. He was a very extraordinary person and full of passion about Torah, and I hope I was lucky to absorb some of that passion. The Pasha Tetzaveh, as you undoubtedly know, is a twin, as it were, of the Pasha of Truma. There are two Pashas in Chumash. One, which is Lessing's Pasha, talks about the Kehillah of the Beis Hamikdash. And this Pasha talks about Aaron HaKohen being inducted into Kehuna, the Big Kehuna, which, trust me, even studying the Rashi can really take you, I'm not exaggerating, not just, unfortunately, the week that we have to study the Pasha of Tetzaveh, but could take you not months, but years, and also many sugars and shas that deal with this Pasha. I'm just going to focus on the first few psukim, and you'll see what troubles me. I'm reading them, starting from Pasuk Chof, which is the end of Perek of Zayin. V'yatot Tetzaveh es b'nei Yisrael. You, ostensibly, whom are we talking about when the Torah says V'yatot Tetzaveh es b'nei Yisrael? Who's being asked to?
Moshe.
Moshe Abin. V'yichu elecho, they're going to take unto you shemen zayizoch, pure olive oil, kosis, pressed, crushed, la ma'or, for the purpose of lighting, la'alos ner tomid, to bring forth light, ner tomid, bi'ol mo'id b'chutz ha'paroches, in bi'ol mo'id, outside the paroches. The paroches, as you know, is that which divides between the Kodesh and Kodesh Kodoshim. Asher alo edus, yaroch also Aaron uvanam me'er v'avogel v'nei Hashem. Aaron and his children will do the aricha of the ner from evening till morning. So let's start with the first problem. The atot tetzaveh. That's not so strange in and of itself. However, if you take a look in Pasuk Aleph of Perek Chof Ches, the next chapter, Miyad, the Torah goes on to say, V'yato ha'krei b'ilecho es Aaron achicha. There's a similar expression. We started V'yato tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael, and now V'yato ha'krei b'ilecho es Aaron achicha. Of course it's V'yato. We just used that in the first pasuk. Why the necessity for the repetition? Moshe Rabbeinu is the one being addressed. V'yato tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael. And therefore, now we should continue. After we discuss the menorah, then we should go on to the next topic, which of course is Aaron HaKohen and his children. They're going to be inducted into the Kehuna. Why the need for Ba'ata? Of course Ba'ata. HaKrei Ve'lecha, that would be sufficient. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, should bring close Aaron HaKicha, Banu Mito, I mean the Pasuk of Aleph of Chavches, Perek Chavches. Mito B'nei Yisrael L'chanoli, Aaron, Nodav, Vabiu, Elazov, Yisavah, B'nei Aaron. And then we have, of course, the obligation of Big Day Kodesh. The Asisa, Big Day Kodesh, Aaron HaKicha. These are the Big Day Kehuna that I made, L'chavod, L'sifares, which again the Rishonim talk a lot about.
Well, why do you need a chicha?
That's a valid question, since we already know who Aaron HaKohen is, so that's the second question that we will perhaps attempt to address. It's also a very good question that you raised. So we have several questions so far. Question number three, since we're just listing questions, why does the Shemen have to be brought to Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu, as you know, the Gemara says in Zvachim and the Gemara says in Tainis that the first 8 days before the Mishkan was consecrated, before it was sanctified, you know, there's a Pasha in Shemini, Vayibayim HaShminim, Karim Moshe, Aaron, Levav, Zikna Yisrael. So we have the days that precede that are the days where the Mishkan is being prepared, and finally the Mishkan is hallowed, as it were, sanctified, concretized in terms of its use. But who serves the Kohen Gadol for the first week? Moshe Rabbeinu. Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu, Kohen Gadol Hoya, the word Moshe Rabbeinu was wearing a chalak lavan, a kind of white kittel, but Moshe Rabbeinu was only a temporary kind of Kohen, because who's the Kohen Gadol? Aaron HaKohen, and his children, of course, they're going to be the Kohenim who do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. So now the Torah says here that, in the first Pasuk, that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to take the Shemen, Zayin, Zoch, Kasi Samar Lahalos Neatomi. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu the one that the oil is being brought to? He's not the one who's serving the Beis HaMikdash. So the Ramban, right away on the spot, the Ramban suggests that Moshe Rabbeinu has a function over here. And the Ramban says that Moshe Rabbeinu, that his function is to judge whether the oil was prepared for the purpose of lighting. Means whether it was prepared in a proper kind of way. That's why Vichmei Lecha. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the one who will make that decision whether the oil was prepared properly or not prepared properly. So the Ramban here reads the Psukim. And what's fascinating in and of itself is that now the question is, what happens if Moshe Rabbeinu passes on? What's going to be, who's going to take care of that function? So the Netziv asks the Kasha. The Netziv HaMikdomer says, based on this Ramban, that the Ramban says that this was a task that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Another question is, what happens if the Moshe Rabbeinu passes on? Exactly, who's going to continue that function? But this is just an answer to the question of what Moshe Rabbeinu, what his role is over here exactly in terms of that. Now, let me just mention something else since I'm already began. I just, as I said, I'm just going to pose a series of questions at the very outset. And let me ask you another question, which you should be familiar with. I'm sure you already are. The idea of the menorah, is it found anywhere else in Chumash besides over here, where the Torah says, V'ato tetzaveh es b'nei Yisrael? Where else does the Torah discuss the menorah? This you should probably have some awareness of, but even if you don't have an immediate awareness, because it requires a little bit of some thinking, that's unquestionably fine. That's a good thing. So now let me show you some other places where you have the idea of the menorah that's mentioned. There's one primary pasuk, but look at Emor. Let's start with Emor. If you have a Chumash Vayikra, in Perech Avdalid, a Vayikra, there's a Chumash there, perhaps you'll be able to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Perech Avdalid, pasuk Galim Vayikra. Pasha Zemor. The Torah says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor." Tzav is bnei Yisrael. V'yichru Eilecha. Isn't it fascinating? It almost seems to be a similar kind of pasuk in its construction. Namely, Klal Yisrael should be commanded. We're talking about the Pasha, the mitzvah of Neros. So, and the Torah goes on to say, "Shemen Zayin Zoch Kasa Lamor La'Alos Ne'atomim."
Where is it?
Perech Avdalid Pasuk Aleph. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalit. You see Aleph and Pasuk, it sounds like...
I'm talking about that Pasuk.
That seems to be almost the identical Pasuk.
It is.
With the only one exception. Here it says, instead of the Atat, the Tzavis B'nai Yisrael, here it's Tzavis B'nai Yisrael, Yichwei Lecha. Very similar Pasuk. And then it goes on. Michutz. Also a very similar pasuk to us, correct? There's a number of one or two distinctions. That here it says that Yarach Oso Aron. And in Tetzaveh, what does it say? Yarach Oso Aron. Ubanav. But here it says Chukas Ovo Darosecha, and there it says Chukas Ovo Darosav. There's one additional pasuk here in Emor. Ala Menorah Tahora Yarach Saneros. Lifnei Hashem Tomid. But you see here, this is the parsha of the menorah. So why does the Torah have to once again re-articulate the idea of the parsha of the menorah? You already mentioned it here in Tetzaveh. So the answer, of course, is that Tetzaveh, essentially, we're discussing the context of Melachas HaMishkan. We're talking about the Seder in the Melachas that were done in the Mishkan, and therefore there's a need to explain the menorah. However, eventually, Klal Yisrael is going to have to be told about this, and that's what's happening in Emma. That's how Rashi, who asked his kasha, that's how Rashi answered the kasha. The Ramban has a different understanding of the matter. The Ramban says that the parsha of the menorah, as you undoubtedly are aware, that the Torah mentions the menorah primarily in one other parsha. And where is that? Where they have a really, I would say, to a large extent, probably the major description and discussion of the menorah at the beginning of Baal Yisra, which is found again in the book. Perches and Bamidba Pasuk Alabes Gimel. So again, let me just, I'll get back to Al Zohar one second. So again, the Tetzaveh, here we have Yigwe Lech Hashem and Zayizah, namely in the context of that which is being contributed to the Mishkan. And now we know that the Klal Yisrael came to the Mishkan. And here, now the Torah is speaking about the mitzvah menorah in a general kind of way. And then, Nochav Olam Baal Yisrael, a third time. Look at the pasuk. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'Emor. Daber el Aaron v'yomar elav. Vahalos chos haneros. El mu panei hamenorah ya'iru shiras haneros. Here we have a bit more information that we don't have elsewhere. The name of the Torah says, El mu panei hamenorah ya'iru shiras haneros. And then the Torah says, Vayaskein Aaron. El mu panei hamenorah helo neroseho. Kasher diber tzivu Hashem es Moshe. V'zeh masi hamenorah miksho zohob. We're talking about the way the menorah was constructed. So we really have several parshios devoted to the menorah, and obviously each one has a specific purpose. So just to once again review for your sake what we just asked till now, we asked several questions. Question number one was the language of beginning tetzaveh. The atot tetzaveh is bnei yisrael v'ichu elecho shem en zayizoch. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu? What's his role over here? We're talking about the Shemen, which is for the purpose of the menorah. It has to do with Aaron HaKohen. Bichwei Lecha. What's that? So the Ramban says Moshe is supposed to examine it to see if it's worthy, if it's roi, if it's not roi. But then we ask the following question, the Tziv asked the Kashi, what's going to be the Dori Doros? Who's going to do this examination? Beyond that, as I said, why, as I mentioned, the second question, why? What's the position of the menorah mentioned over here when really we had two other parshas that really speak about the menorah in a more formal kind of way. The construction of the menorah along with other vessels of the sanctuary. I'm talking about the Klei HaMishkan, if you remember, which undoubtedly you do, that in last week's parsha, as we pointed out, you have the different kelim of the Mishkan, plus you also have the menorah, the fourth parsha. I'm talking about Perek Chafei, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. That's the construction of the menorah that the Torah describes in Lessi's Pasha. As we have four parashas, the Chumash, that talk about the menorah. Truma, in Perach Hafei, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Lamed Beis, Lamed Gimel, there, it's a great length. We just read it last week. Wow. Almost an entire parak devoted to the menorah. Now we have here Tetzaveh in the context of the Mishkan and what Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to do. And then we have an Emor, and we have four times Valoska. That's not really not my interest right now. That's for another shir. But I'm just focused so far on simply the language that we mentioned. Question number two and three. Perach of Chesia, Pasuk Aleph. Vi'ato ha'krevi lechas, Aron Ochicha. We just said Vi'ato and Pasuk Aleph, two psukim earlier. Why do we need to repeat Vi'ato ha'krevi lechas, Aron Ochicha? Beyond that, the Pasuk says in Chaf Aleph, Chukas Olam V'darosa Me'ez B'nei Yisrael. What does it mean, the Eitz B'nai Yisrael, from the children of Israel? So the Ramban claims that it means that the Shemen will be taken from those members of Klal Yisrael who are willing to contribute. That's what Ramban writes here in Perek Chaf Zayin. He points this out in Pasuk Chaf. But that's already been stipulated previously. What's the Chiddush of that? And beyond that, what's Chukas Olam U'Darosam? What does that mean, an everlasting law for all future generations? Why here more than anywhere else? And in general, this law is only relevant when? Only when the Beis Hamikdash is extant. And that is at the time of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. So that, what you say just now is a Ramban and Baal Isla. You're probably familiar with it. I assume that's where you got it from. So there's also Balamor and Shabbos, but the Balamor in Shabbos is not as explicit as the Ramban and Baal Isla. The Ramban and Baal Isla here points out, because Rashi has a famous comment. Rashi says over there in Baal Isla, why is there a juxtaposition, the Pasha of the Menorah to the Pasha of Nesi'im in Nassau? What Nesi'im brought as a korban. Says Rashi over there, in Baal Yisrael, when Aaron saw the Chanukas of Nesi'im, Chol Shodaita, he got very disgruntled. He was very disillusioned. He was upset. Kshalai Yimam Chanukah, he wasn't part of it. Amar Lakadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecha, don't worry. Your share is greater than theirs. Sha'atom Madlik Umeitiv Saneras. So you're going to take care of the Neres Chanukah. That's even greater. So the Ramban has a whole discussion on this Rashi. In Ke'ilu, he was Menachem Aaron HaKohen with Halakas Aderes. That was the Tanchumen, that was the Nechama, that was the consolation by Aaron HaKohen. What about everything else they used to bring every day? Haktaras HaKohen was brought morning and night. Why was in the Menucha, all the Karbanos, he brought every day the Kangola, bring a Minchas Chaviten, every single day. Ba'beike Ba'erek. So there are many things to be Menachem Aaron HaKohen with. What is the nature of this Chalitza Sadas? Why is he having Chalitza Sadas? Why is he getting all perturbed? Why is he getting upset? Why is he getting disgruntled? That his karma is greater than that in the Nesi'im. He brought many, many karmas. So the Ramban sees in here a remez to Chanukah. What Danny said. A remez to Chanukah of the Neros in the Okay, I'm not going to that right now. I just want to answer some of the kashas that I have. So these kashas bothered them before Shin. Many of them bothered my father, and I asked my Rebbe, I'm going to see those kind of tapas because I saw many, many years ago these questions. I want to share with you a yisod that he said that I think is fantastic. That's really going to be the bulk of the shir. What's the distinction between these two sedras, the two pashas of Truma and Tetzaveh? Truma is devoted to the Mishkan and to a detached and detailed description of the Klei Mishkan. All the Kelim, the Mizbeach, the Menorah, the Shulchan, the Aron, the Kaperes, the Chulam. Tetzaveh, the first two psukim, are devoted to what? To the people who work in the Mishkan, namely Aaron and Vavah. And to the Begodim, that's where the Torah goes on, beginning of Ches, described the big Dikuna, the Begodim that are worn by Aaron HaKohen and his children when they're involved in the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash. So there's something there which is a very strange and rather, I would say, even outlandish. These two psukim that speak about Shemen and the light of the menorah are completely out of place. What are they doing over here? The Torah, the entire Pasha of Truma, as we said, all the way to the end, is concerned with what? With the Kelim and the Mishkan. And look towards the end of Truma. You can see for yourself, there the Torah speaks about the Mizbeach and the Chatzar Mishkan. Chatzar meaning the courtyard of the Mishkan, all the way to the end. And then Perach of Ches, which is going to introduce Aaron HaKohen, and of course the Big Dikuna, that's Aaron HaKohen, the Big Dikuna. Why suddenly in the middle, betwixt and between, as the Torah presented, two psukim relating to Shemen, Lamor, for the menorah, it doesn't seem to be out of place. Beyond that, it's even more peculiar. Namely, when is Aaron HaKohen singled out as the chief functionary of the Mishkan? In Perek of Ches, correct? The third pasuk of the Pasha. That's when Aaron HaKohen is going to become what? The Kohen Gadol. Not just Aaron HaKohen, but rather Aaron and Nadav, Aviv, Elazar, Yisrael, and Aaron. That's when they're becoming what? The Kohanim, and they have to wear Big Dekahuna. So now, why are they mentioned in the first two psukim in the Parsha of Tetzaveh? Then they're going to be the ones who are going to light the menorah. They're not even official functionaries in the Mishkan yet. That came afterwards. That's the rest of the Parsha of Tetzaveh. So what exactly are these two psukim doing here? All the Rishonim are bothered by this. The Archaim HaKadosh, right on the spot, I don't know if you are so familiar with him, it's Kedai to become familiar with the Archaim HaKadosh. Absolutely gorgeous and mind-boggling passion. So he has a very interesting parallel that he draws between the beginning of the Pasha and the beginning of Truma. Do you recall the beginning of Truma? I spoke about this. Dabrel b'nei Yisrael, what's the language? V'yikru li Truma. And of course, by the way, all the Mefarshim asked, it should not have said v'yikru li Truma, but what should it have said? V'yikru li Truma. They're making a contribution, they're going to give to me. What's v'yikru li? So I mentioned the Beis HaLevi. Oh, shtickel tale of the Beis HaLevi. Maybe you remember. Beis HaLevi said that, in effect, when a person gives tzedakah, or a person, in effect, contributes to the Mishkan, so the person is not, in reality, giving, he's taking for himself. Because at the end of the day, as you know, when the Ramban points this out, and there's a Radvaz, I refer to a Radvaz. Radvaz in Hilchos Sanhedrin, the Radvaz in the Chuvas. He was a rabbi in Constantinople. Then later on, he came to Shalayim. One of the most famous of all the respondents is the Radvaz of David Ibn Zimra. He was a Goy Nadir, a very famous Chumash that he wrote. So he asked Akasha, this is not counted in the time that is allowed to me. So he asked Akasha, the Radvaz, why is it there's a din called Einan Reis Masa Rasha? That's halacha that you can't, you're not allowed to incriminate yourself. If a person comes to Bezin, Reuben comes to Bezin and says he killed Shimon, what does Bezin do? We throw him out. Why? Because you can't make yourself into a rush. Or if Reuben says, I committed the following crime, I was Zayman Baltashis, or I was Zayman Alav that Yechai Malkus for, we throw him out of court. Unless there are Edom, of course. If Edom come, means Edom can come and testify, but they can't incriminate themselves. You can't incriminate yourself. However, when it comes to money, monetary affairs, if I go to Yosef Lindenblatt and I say, I want to give you $1 million. Here, take a Kenyan Suda, and you make a Kenyan Suda, and I owe you $1 million. Or Hodas Baldin, I say, I want to give you $1 million. What's the din? It's Chal. Ask the Radvaz, why is there a distinction? Isn't that also incrimination? You're incriminating yourself, so to speak, by virtue of the fact you're about to lose $1 million. That's a kind of self-incrimination. So the Rav says, no, there's a distinction between monetary affairs and when it comes to din nefashos or any onish aguf, onish which your body's going to suffer, whether it's malchus or misa chas v'shalom, in both cases. What's the difference? Your body is not yours, says the Rav. Who owns your body? The Rav Shalom. You're just a steward. It's a pikadon that was given to you. You're a shomer of that pikadon, and that shomer, of course, has to guard the pikadon punctiliously, very carefully. Namely, the pikadon chas v'shalom should not, God forbid, deviate, stray from the path. Namely, every aver that a person has, my hands were created to put on tefillin, to do mitzvahs, to eat matzah. My legs were created to run to shul, run to beis medrash, run to do mitzvahs, run to do chesed. My eyes were created to see dvar shemikdusha and to only witness the dveikus that Hashem and Hashem is barach. Every aver, and a person, the Rambam writes in Vayikra, that if a person misuses an aver, he's go over on mi'ila. So mi'ila refers to what? That I'm being nenef hegdish inappropriately, because your body is hegdish. That the Gemara says in brachas and daf lamed over there, the steer of the grass between two pesukim, that Hashemayim Shemayim Hashem Baruch Hasadam Le'odom, and then the other pasuk that says no, that not that Hashemayim Shemayim Hashem Baruch Hasadam Le'odom, Hashem Baruch Hasadam Le'odom. Everything belongs to Him. The answer is Kan Kanim Abracha Kan Nachar Abracha. Before Abracha, everything belongs to Hashem. After Abracha, I have permission to go ahead now. I acknowledge Hashem, permission to go ahead and use what Hashem gave us. Otherwise, I'm Eiran Gezel Le'ila. So the Radvaz says the chiluk between money and other kinds of things is that money Hashem gives me, I can spend it, I can fritter it away, I can buy a beautiful pair of tefillin with it, I can go ahead and use money for chesed to support yeshivas and meisters of chesed and the like. That's exactly how money should be used. But really, money also belongs to Hashem. Li hakesed li hazov am Hashem tzokos, says the Navi. Everything belongs to me. Or the pasuk says divayamim that mimcho hakol, everything comes from Hashem. He gives it to us to use, but we have the right to use it. We can throw it away, we can fritter it away, we can squander it, we can spend it, we can invest it, we can use it for tzedakah and supporting yeshivas. So that's the thing between mamo and self-incrimination. There, we don't have the right to do so. One second. The reason why I say all this again is because of it's a, this was an aside, as you understand, an interlude, not in the question, but because the question. I'm going to go back to the question one second more. And that is the language of Yichud Truma. That's what it goes back to. The Beis Halev explains it. Yichud Truma, that we're really taking for ourselves. By virtue of the Gemara in the Barbasa, with Mumbas HaMelech, he started giving away all of his eitzes. He said to his relatives, what are you giving away all the eitzes? We'll have nothing left for us. He said, I'm not giving it away. On the contrary, this is the best way that one should invest one's money by giving it to tzedakah and chesed and yeshivas and talmud torah. Anyway, one reason why I said this whole thing, that was just an interlude and not counted in the Zman, is because the Rachaim has a parallel to the pasuk over here. What's the parallel to v'yichud l'truma? What does our pasuk say? V'yichud elecha. Very similar, the Rachaim HaKadosh says. Beyond that, there's another parallelism between the opening psukim and the opening psukim of Tetzaveh, besides what I just said, v'yichud l'truma and v'yichud elecha. There's another expression. Namely, what does it say over there? It mentions clearly the idea that Hashem is going to dwell among us. Correct? What does it say over here? Something of a similar nature. Everything is taking place l'fnei Hashem. And also there it says, and the Torah then goes on to say, that we're talking about, where's the tomb being taken from Klal Yisrael? They're also taken from Klal Yisrael. Somehow there seems to be a likeness between the two psukim. I'm just mentioning this Zerachagam because Zerachayim HaKadosh points this out. And one more thing I should mention, and this is a famous issue. There's one parsha in Chumash from the time that he appeared in the scene that the name of Moshe Rabbeinu is not found. Which parsha is that? Tetzaveh. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not to be found. Even the classic Mefarshim responded to this, indicating it's not just something homiletical in nature, but rather something which should be considered very, very carefully. Apparently, as the Baal Turim is the one who asked this kasha at the very beginning of the parsha, and he answers simply by pointing out that Moshe Rabbeinu, if you recall, he told Hashem at one point in time, "Mecheinina mesifcha asher kasavta." Hashem should erase him from the sefer that he wrote. And so the Gemara says, a number of times in Shas. Gemara says Moikodin, Gemara says in Makis, Bris Kusel is Fasayim. If a great person says something, no matter what the circumstances are, what he said is going to be Mekuyim in some form or fashion. So it's Mekuyim here, and this is Pasha. His name was taken out of the Pasha, he's not mentioned. Okay, begin.
Okay, back to the Ravaz very quickly. If somebody eats treif, isn't it only roy for them to go and admit and to give themselves and to get makos? To get makos.
Someone who eats treif is unquestionably going to suffer from timtum aleil. I mentioned actually this morning, there chagav, a comment of a sefer called Nachal Eshkol. Nachal Eshkol is a pirush on the sefer Eshkol. The sefer Eshkol is written by one of the Rishonim.
What's it about?
It's a collection of halachas from
Kabbalah.
No, it's not Kabbalah. It's Gemara. It's all of Shas. So some say some ascribe it to the Rabbi Sefer Eshkol. It's not really who wrote it, but so one of the commentaries was written by great Adam Gadol. Tells the following story. It's like the Bishul Akam that I've been speaking about with this young man here, this outstanding young man. So since you didn't hear the story, I'll say it over. I mentioned this morning. There are two people who were in the days of the Rishonim, in the days of the Spanish Inquisition. So they were on a ship, and the ship was shipwrecked, and they ended up essentially being taken to captivity by Goyim, by non-Jews. And one of them was taken to captivity, and he discovered after a while the person who took him and basically saved his life was a Marano, what they call Andusin, a hidden Jew. But publicly he couldn't practice his religion because he was in a Catholic setting in Spain, and it would not be possible. The other one, unfortunately, was taken by a real guy, and the guy saved his life. And he ate there, the Velas and Tlefus and Bisholakum and everything else also.
Arisho?
I wouldn't call them Rishonim, I'd call them people who lived during the days of the Rishonim.
Ah, but not actually a...
No? So this is what happened to them. So then, after, I don't know how long a period of time, but after an extended period of time, they were able to gain their freedom and go back to where they were. And then they went to a big rav, I don't know which rav it is, and they asked him, why is it that one of us, Reuven, was able to somehow, was taken, was ransomed by a person who was a hidden Jew, Marano, and he ended up eating kosher food and doing proper things, Mashenk, and the other one was ransomed by a goy, and he ended up with, even though it was Pikuach Nevesh, so therefore there was no question that he was allowed to go ahead and do what he did. So he answered the rav, and don't ask me how he knew, found this some sort of Ruach HaKodesh. He said, because you, the first one, Reuven, you apparently lived a lifestyle where you were Mesa Nefesh regarding these halachas related to Achila, Bisholakum, and making sure you're never eating something that Chas V'Shalom even has a... And therefore, because he was so careful in his lifetime, he was given a schar that even when he was taken into captivity and then finally ransomed, but he was ransomed by a person who, Baruch Hashem, was a Shema Torah Mitzvahs, albeit not publicly but privately. The other one was not so medakhtim. Because of that, Reb Hashem gave him Mida Kedigit Mida, and he ended up eating with eating treifus. So even though he was not eating treifus for Kavana, to be Kuach Nevesh, but at the end of the day, there's Timtum Aleph. I think I mentioned here, now maybe, I think he probably remembers, maybe you remember also, Yossi, and Joey, that I was zeicher to meet Hagoyim of Yaakov Kamenetsky in 1983. And among the questions I asked him, I had different Talmidim over the years.
She went with Remington?
Yeah, I went with my wife, Shlita. I went before I came to Eretz Yisrael. It was 1983. It was about 36 years ago. One of the questions I asked him was, I taught Iranians over the years, Iranians who escaped from Iran. It was many, many years ago they escaped. I still have some Talmidim who are today Muslim, are very, very accomplished people. And some live in California, some in Great Neck, and then I still have a Shaykh with another two of them. It's going back over 40 years. And they escaped because it was when the Shah fell in Iran. I don't know if you know the history of Iran. You know about it now because of what's happening in the Middle East and all that, and Trump and everything else. I also taught Russians, and I found the Russians I taught to be very, very wild and undomesticated, difficult to teach. They were just literally very, very strident,
what?
Very, sometimes even a handful. Mashenka, the Iranians are much more refined. So I asked Hagoyim of Yaakov Kamenetsky, how to explain that phenomenon. So he tells me on the spot the following. He said, do you know anything about Jewish history? So I don't know. I should say yes or no. So he says, I'm a student of Jewish history, Yaakov said. And in the Russian Revolution, 1914, so once the Russia is a communist country with Stalin and company. So they completely decided to desiccate Russia and decided to essentially extirpate and eviscerate any even shemitz of Judaism. And Jews had to go underground, those that remained Jewish, very few remained Jewish, and mitzvahs were eliminated and you couldn't do anything in the KGB and all that. You probably know a little bit about that. It was very difficult for Jews, and more or less they had no choice but to eat non-kosher food, and everything became completely Judenrein. I mean, without Jews and without Orthodox Jews, without Torah, without mitzvahs, without anything. The Iranians, even though they were, after the Shah fell, so made them try to get their children out of Iran, and made them, children escape, made them remain there, their parents, but they still maintained their fealty to Judaism, to kashrus and the like. And then we said, a person who doesn't eat kosher, chas v'sholom, so a person is then going to have timtum halev, Gemara says that. Gemara derives from psukim, chumash. Timtum halev means your entire personality will change, will become on the rough side, will become not refined. Hashem Kadosh will maintain the field to the kashrus and the like, so they'll be refined and they'll be pure, they'll be unsullied. That's what Yaakov Kamensky told me. I remember I told this to my Rebbe, Nisim Alpazin, Sadi Nidracha, who was the one who arranged the meeting with Yaakov Kamensky, and he told me I should tell it to the Gadol Hador, to the Shishivat, the Meshach Feinstein, that's all, which I then did. And he told me that's why he's Chakim of the Yudoi. He's the smartest Jew. That's what Rav Moshe said about Rav Yankov Kamenetsky. But whatever the case is, I'm going back to all this. I'm mentioning the problem that the Moshe Rabbeinu is not, his name is not mentioned over here. So here's what my Rebbe told me. To answer all these kashas, that's what I'm going to do now in the next few minutes. My Rebbe, I'm going to see Dov Kanatapsky, he said the following. There's an amazing element here. Now, I actually spoke about this on Tuesday night. I don't know if anyone else, one or two people were there. On Tuesday night, when I spoke about Chumras.
I was there.
And I spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen, also in that context, how each one was absolutely so selfless regarding the other. Namely, I mentioned Rachel B'Sama Chaliba, if you recall that. Gemara and Shabbos, Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu, when even though he becomes the leader of Klal Yisrael, Aaron was not no kina whatsoever. He was very happy for his brother. I have a brother. Maybe you met him, Rav Aaron David Shlita. He is literally not kohen, but he's Azevi Aaron Akain. Oyv Shalom, Brother Shalom, Oyv Sabrias, Bekabel HaTorah. So I don't come near his toenails. Anyway, so, but we are still, Baruch Hashem, very close. And I see what he does, and the tremendous things he does for Klal Yisrael. And not only am I not mekaneh him, on the contrary, everyone I meet, so I'm happy to be known as the brother of Avraham David. Baruch Hashem, I have that schutz. So here, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, something very similar, very interesting. Moshe Rabbeinu, after all that he's done, he's the one who engineered the gula of Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. He's the Manig Yisrael. He's the one who navigated all the shoals, correct? And he's played the leading role in the entire drama of Matan Torah. And now what's going on? All of a sudden, who's going to be in charge of the Mishkan? His brother Aaron? Not only Aaron, but the children of Aaron. That's what the Torah goes on to say. Yarach also Aaron of Rabbeinu. The children of Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a lot of discussion about the children of Moshe Rabbeinu. What happened to them? So I discussed once a Chazal, I mentioned it actually a few months ago. A Chazal that the children of Moshe Rabbeinu, they were not in Mitzrayim. And because they didn't go through the Shibud Mitzrayim, Im Anochi Mitzara, they were not necessarily rowing to, shall we say, be able to take leadership positions in Klal Yisrael. Now, what can you ask about Moshe Rabbeinu? He was a Midyan, so I got some business, a lot of discussion about this. But what's very fascinating, that Moshe Rabbeinu, one could have thought that here he doesn't have any special status in the context of the Mishkan, etc. The first 7 days, I told the Gemara in Zvokin and the Gemara in Tainus that he serves the Kohen Gadol wearing a kind of white kittel, called a blob, the Gemara says, but only for a short period of time. He was supposed to essentially train Aaron and train the Kohanim in terms of what they're supposed to do in the Mishkan. But so what's very fascinating is that his children, Moshe Rabbeinu, have no status whatsoever. Neither in Manigos, nor in the Mishkan, nor anywhere. And this would normally, I would say, among the average, in the average group of people, that could be a source of a lot of angst. A-N-G-S-T. The source of a lot of stress. The source of a lot of envy. The source of a lot of even kina, you might call it. That could very well happen. So, my Rebbe suggested, perhaps, that Aaron and his children, they have to take a look the first two psukim again, they hear they're mentioned as the ones who are going to light the menorah, even before they are singled out as functionaries in the Mishkan, which is the next pasuk, right? Take a look at Berakha Pes Pasukal, where it says, why is that done right away? In order to ease the shock, in order to have to cushion the, if you will, the kind of pain that might be associated with the fact that Aaron and Cohen and his children are going to be given such a position. Because I would have thought there would be jealousy on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu. No. The Gemara says, actually, it's Gemara, a very famous Gemara. I mentioned that the Pasuk in Tehillim. And the Pasuk in Tehillim indicates about these two brothers. Each one was not becoming the other. Each one saw the other was being really growing for whatever position they got. But the Torah wants to introduce Aaron and his sons gradually and not over dramatically. That's why Rebbe suggested why the first two psukim, having it Aaron and Kohen, his children, even before the Torah introduces them as being coming to Kohanim, etc. But beyond that, Rebbe said the following. He said that there's something here which is even more critical. The Torah is saying, yes, okay, Aaron and Kohen, first we introduce them in the first two psukim, that they're going to be the ones who are going to be lighting the menorah. And then beyond that, they're being the functionaries in the Mishkan. They're going to wear the big garden, big de kahuna, the chavilos sefaros, the law of the karbanos. However, which position is transcendent? The Gemara says, and the Rambam says, in the Hilchos Talmud Torah, if I'm familiar with it, there are three ksarim. Shlosh ksarim, we have also the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. What are the three ksarim? Keset Torah, Keset Kuna, Keset Malchus. Which is the highest? Which one is on top? Keset Torah. Torah al Kula. Mishnah says, the Talmud Torah al Kula. So even though Aaron, in the fact, is the one who's going to offer the karbanos, who is directing Aaron how to offer the karbanos?
Moshe.
Aaron is the one who functions in the Mishkan. Who's the one who's teaching him how to function in the Mishkan? Moshe. Aaron is the one who wears the big kahuna. Who's the one who describes them and designs them? Moshe. Knows Aaron may be the one who carries out the Ratzon Hashem in the Avodah, the Beis Hamikdash, but who's the one who transmits it? Moshe. Aaron may have kahuna. Moshe is given Malchus. What Malchus are we talking about? Malchus Shel Torah. And that's exactly what the Torah says here. And that's how my Rebbe explained the first three psukim. The Atah Tetzaves B'nai Yisrael. And then again, the stress of the Atah Rebbe Lecha is Aaron Achicha. The Atah comes to underscore that what overrides and what transcends everything? Malchus Shel Torah. That's what directs traffic. The Atah, you Moshe Rabbeinu. Even though you seem to be not in the limelight, you seem to be in the background, you seem to be somewhat, shall we say, in the dark. And who's the major, most pronounced figure over here, Aaron HaKohen? It's not true. At the end of the day, you're the one who's going to direct traffic, and that's what the two Atahs, both in terms of introducing or inducting Aaron into the Huna, as well as actually the beginning. But also, there's something else here, which I'm sure you're aware of, I'm not telling you any chidushim. The menorah and the light that it produces, what does that represent according to Chazal? The light of what? The light of Torah. That's a W Yadua. It's mentioned actually by many, many Midrashim, by many in Mefarshim. Take a look at the Netziv over here. Take a look at the Malkum over here. They all point out this connection and Chazal. But it's actually a lot of Midrashim. Many Midrashim Chazal actually connect the menorah to the Or Shel Torah. The menorah represents, we're talking about the light of Torah. And in fact, all this being done under Moshe Rabbeinu's, under his tutelage and under his direction, basically, Moshe Rabbeinu is the eternal Rebbe of Klal Yisrael. The Rebbe used to comment always, he's not called Moshe Malkeinu, he has a Din Melech. As Azish Din Rambam writes in many sources that Moshe has a Din Melech, because of what do we call him? Moshe Rabbeinu. His primary role is the teacher of Klal Yisrael. So now I want to read the text again, and in light of just what I said, just to show you how to read the Psukim. Moshe here is the Rishlech Hashem. Moshe commands Klal Yisrael just like Hashem does. Moshe examines the world, because he represents the will of Hashem. It's true, the specific mitzvah to light the menorah, that's only to the time of the Mikdash. However, this principle that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to transmit the will of Hashem, that's relevant for posterity. It's relevant to Dori Doris. So it could be that's what it means by Rabbi said, when the Pasuk says, Chukas Olam L'Doreisam Eis B'nei Yisrael, doesn't refer to the lighting the menorah. What does it refer to? The Atah Tetzaveh. Refers to the tzibur that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the one who will be directing traffic, navigating the shoals of Klal Yisrael. That Torah is the ultimate keser, the ultimate crown, and that explains as well why is the position of the menorah described here. Is it for the purpose of contrast, namely that where Aaron HaKohen lighting the menorah outside the parochas? outside the dividing curtain that separates the Kodesh from the Kodesh Kodashim. Moshe does his function. Where does he perform his function? Inside the Kodesh Kodashim. Basically, the tzibui that Moshe Rabbeinu gives comes directly from the Eidos, which is inside the Kodesh Kodashim. Aaron's function is limited to one family, namely the family of Aaron HaKohen, their direct descendants. Moshe Rabbeinu's function, as the Rambam says in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Keser Kuhuna, says the Rambam, is vested in whom? In Aaron HaKohen and his children. Keser Malchus is invested in the descendants of whom? Of David HaMelech. What about Keser Torah? Kalarot Zalito, Yavavito. Meaning, every single Jew, every single one in this classroom has the opportunity and the obligation as well, if you have the Yizdaiti, of obtaining the Keser Torah. Basically, the function of Moshe Rabbeinu is not limited to one person, to one family, to Moshe Rabbeinu, to his children, but rather somebody that's shy to all Klal Yisrael. That's exactly what the Torah is trying to teach. I said, my Rebbe, the primacy of Torah and the primacy of Torah teaching, and that's so fundamental that no Jew can be excluded. And that's why it says, Chukas Olu Darosa, Meis Bnei Yisrael. So then I asked him, why is Moshe Rabbeinu's name, according to this presentation, not found in Parshat Tetzaveh? So he said, Adrama, that's the reason. The Malchus of Torah is open to all. The Malchus of Kehuna is limited to Aaron HaKohen and his children. The Malchus of kingship is limited to David HaMelech's children. But the Malchus of Torah is the royalty of Torah. It's very democratic. It has nothing to do with genealogy. It's not limited to one family. It's relevant to all Klal Yisrael. So all of us can, in effect, become part of the Atah Tetzaveh as Bnei Yisrael. Every single person in this room has the potential to achieve the Keser Shel Torah, which the Rambam says in Perek Gimel Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam writes about that being acquired. A person should not waste a single moment in his day. A person should devote himself to study the Torah, including at nighttime, especially at nighttime. And there's a Rav Soloveitchik has a whole shir on this Keser Torah at nighttime. But whatever the case is, all this is embedded in one pasuk. The Atah Tetzaveh Bnei Yisrael, the Atah Kreb Yalecha Yisrael Mechicha. So I like this approach. I think my Rebbe with this was able to miyashi a lot of the kashas that we asked over here in the context of the Tzaveh. And all this, as I said, the entire shir is really designed to just more or less show you how carefully you have to read Sukkim and Chumash and Tanakh and in general Shainim and Achrenim and try your best to decipher and to see a larger picture from the particular elements that I found sometimes in individual Sukkim. Okay.
She got that one.